This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, we're back. Hour number two. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. All things legal. You can call us or text us on the Oakland Heart Talk and Text Line at 260-1870. And we were talking a little bit about wills, and we got a text saying, "Gentlemen, what are your thoughts on the death of Gene Hackman, his wife, and his dog?" And sort of an interesting.
Well, I'm sorry. Thoughts on what?
On the death of Gene Hackman, his wife, and his dog. And it was sort of an interesting story because, you know, Gene Hackman was always. There's not a lot of actors I don't say admire, but someone who, you know, if he's on, I'll stop and watch it. I think Gene Hackman's probably one of the great actors of all time. He just sort of did his thing and did it well. didn't comment on the state of culture much.
Well, and the other thing too about it, he had range, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had range. He's authentic.
All different. Parts. He wasn't the same guy in every movie.
Right. He was a very authentic actor. And
But
and he knew who he was. I mean, he knew he was an actor. He knew he wasn't a politician, which is rare today.
Right. And he knew he wasn't a big box star, you know, like he wasn't going to, you know, be like a Tom Cruise and or, you know, one of these actors. He wasn't one of those guys. He knew he was just a solid actor that, you know, played a part, you know, in a cast and not was not like necessarily the lead. And he played it well. He was always very good at what he did.
Yeah. I mean, one of my all-time favorite movies is Hoosiers, which is, which is, you know, interesting. There's an attorney, Jay McCreary, who's probably, he's a mediator at one of the mediation firms, MAPS. And Jay was a longtime attorney, sort of on the back end of his career. And his father was Jay McCreary, who was the assistant coach he was the head coach at LSU from 1957 to 1965, head basketball coach. And then when they hired Press Maravich, he agreed to be an assistant coach. And thereafter, he was the first women's coach at LSU. I think it was a club team at the time for the Lady Bengals. And Jay's father, or the attorney, Coach Jay McCreary, I'd worked for him at LSU, and he had told me a story in the early 80s before the movie Hoosiers that he came from Indiana, and he lost to this podunk team in a state championship, in the Indiana state championship. And he told us the story of Hoosiers, which we paid a little mind to. And then when we saw the movie, he was the coach
right.
who lost to Hickory, which was sort of interesting. So,
wow.
But when I was looking at, I sort of read up on the story on what's our thoughts on Gene Hackman and his wife and his dog. This is what I think happened Gene Hackman's 95. He had dementia. Very poor health. Probably needed to be in assisted living to the extent that he required a lot of attention, a lot of care, you know, maybe to the extent to doing very basic things such as going to the bathroom, eating, and so which apparently his wife was, you know, took on at their home. Also, they sort of lived a sort of a quiet, isolated life with not a lot of people in and out, and he became very reclusive in his last 6 months. And it appears that his wife died of natural causes. And then he went a period of time without, you know, without any help, not eating, not, you know. And then he ended up dying. And I think, you know, there was an extended time. They had several dogs, but one of them had died. But it seems to me that wife died, and then he died due to the lack of care and attention that he needed given his Alzheimer's, his advanced Alzheimer's. And then at that point, you know, I guess the dog wasn't fed or what have you, wasn't cared for, and that dog wasn't able to, so you know, survive right. that prolonged type of period. But my point
you
is...
Know, it's
yeah, you go ahead.
Well, no, it's funny because, you know, you said she died of natural causes. Something I saw indicated that she died... Speaking of dogs, I'm about to kill two of them. She died of some sort of rat disease where it's like rat droppings or rat urine, and it's not passed like through human contact. Aaron and I had to look it up to see exactly what it was that, but they mentioned it. And so, you know, she could have gotten some sort of virus from whatever, but she ended up dying as a result. And she apparently died about a week before him. And like you said, you know, it's interesting that, you know, because my guess is prior to that incident, she was probably capable of taking care of him. You know, he might have still been physically mobile enough to get up and go to the restroom or do whatever, and to where she didn't necessarily need the strength of others. And she was just kind of quietly taking care of her husband. But then all of a sudden, she falls ill to this disease or whatever it is, and this virus, and he doesn't know what to do, who to call. He's basically not there, and so it's sad. It really is sad. But you know, how do you make that call, right? To I'm here. I'm healthy. I'm perfectly capable of taking care of my spouse of however many years, you know, why put him in a home, right? If you get to the point where you got to turn him, you got to lift him, I don't have the physical help. Maybe you should have somebody coming in, you know, certainly they probably had the means for that to come in and help with all of those, you know, physical things that need to be done to make sure that the person's cared for properly.
Those are
decisions.
And I think one of the issues is if you do have parents in that situation who have a, you know, maybe early stages of dementia or, but still living independently, you need to have a lot of interaction with them at that time, especially just to, you know, checking up on them, making sure that they're okay. And right. I think my point was there was nobody there during that extended period of time checking on them. You know, they didn't have a social unit at the time that said, hey, we hadn't heard from, you know, Gene's wife.
Or even a telephone, if it's not a visit, right?
Right.
Just a telephone. Nobody's answering the phone for a week.
Right.
You know, because apparently she had gone about a week before he did. And it's sad. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, they had a life together, and she felt capable of doing it. Apparently, she was doing it. You know, he lived to 95, so she was handling it. But all of a sudden, the caretaker got sick. It's just strange that they would not have had someone, just some assisted living in home person that comes a few days a week or even every day for a little while, just to kind of, go handle his bathroom needs, you know, who knows what.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
You know, and one of the things when we talk about an elder care, and there's a lot of issues. We were talking a little bit about, you know, dealing with people in advanced age involving their will, their estate planning and wills, is also if you have a relative in a nursing home. And look, a lot of nursing homes, most of them do a great job. We have no, you know, and are to be commended. So we're not criticizing anybody or we're not disparaging, and they do a great job. But there's some places where, if especially if it's a Medicaid facility, you have to show up for that relative because the other workers know if you show up that you will get a better standard of care than you would for someone who never shows up or for a patient who doesn't have any relatives. I always say, look, you got to go there because they're watching. And if you show up often, and they know you show up often, then the chances of your, you know, relative who's in there getting less than standard, you know, optimal care is lessened because they understand that people are watching. Whereas just sort of maybe with some workers, you know, it might be human nature. Well, nobody's really watching. I really don't need to turn them. I don't really need to, you know, some of the bad things that you read about that are, you know, sort of, you know, as far as neglect occur because there's not interaction among friends or family. Or so, you know, that's sort of the lesson that I drew from the Gene Hackman issue is you know, if you have someone in that situation who's got dementia, they may be living, you know, maybe some quasi-independently, but you know, still on their own. You know, just you have to check on them and, you know, just have a lot of interaction. It, you know, becomes almost like a, not a job, but a requirement to make sure they're okay. So that was just sort of a lesson there. Also, we were talking a little bit about wills and, you know, capacity to do will, but there's another aspect of what happens a lot of times is, and you'd allude to it last hour, is duress. You know, can you contest a will on based on duress, and what is sort of the standard of that? And a lot of times you have these situations where, let's say you had, you know, mom and dad who were married for 40, you know, 50 years, and, you know, mom died and dad is heartbroken. I mean, just heartbroken. And then maybe 3 or 4 years later, he starts getting female companionship from someone half his age. And the next thing you know, dad is giving his entire estate to the new female companionship, who's probably the same age as the granddaughter. And, you know, at what point does it become duress? Or at what point does it become just being a stupid decision, you know, or unwise decision?
Influence, right? And one of the things I think you need to look at is disproportionate gifts, right? So if somebody's got, you know, $5 million in the bank and they give a $10,000 gift to somebody, you know, it's not unusual, perhaps, or out of the ordinary for a person with that kind of wealth to give a gift. But if it's somebody with a, you know, $200,000 estate and they give away 5% of it to some stranger or to a third party, then that's an issue. You know, and there are other things, there are other signs, you know. Unfortunately, you know, look for signs when you go visit of bruising, right? I mean, look for signs of assets, you know. Ask your parent, hey, look, can I look at your checkbook? Can I look at your account? You know, I want to see that you're making the right decisions, you know. I've got another situation where a mom and a daughter are fighting. Dad passed away, and mom wants to run the show, and she's just not capable of handling some of the business things that the small business is dealing with. And so, you know, here you are now, you're this adult child with your own children and perhaps some grandchildren, but you know, you now you're the person that's got to come along and tell mom that you're making horrible business decisions. I, you know, it's time for me to have to interdict you. It's time for me to step in, you know, just to preserve the wealth. Well, it's just for mom's purposes, so mom can, you know, live out her life and not send the business down the tubes. So those are just really hard decisions to have to make, you know. And it's like, if I pull this trigger, I'm going to be hated. I'm going to be hated for the rest of my life in mom's eyes. And, you know, am I supposed to do the right thing or the easy thing? It's bad. It's horrible decisions that people have to make and hard decisions they have to make. And then of course, then you've got to convince the court that you're right. That, you know, mom is making these bad decisions. So you've got to start gathering your witnesses. You've got to start, honestly, videoing some things if you can, or recording some telephone conversations, and maybe get the CPA involved, maybe get the lawyer involved, you know, for the business to show that, hey, look, things are really, you know, falling apart here, and mom doesn't have the capacity to handle things. It's a bad situation, but if you have to pull that trigger, you know, the things you need to look out for and things you need to do to get prepared for that moment when you present it to a court.
Right. And that's why they're still around. And, you know, I think a lot of times when evaluating whether there's undue duress, well, the issue is whether there's undue duress in connection with the will is whether he is knowingly making a bad decision in some ways or unwise decision, but he knows it, mm-hmm. or he or she knows it, or is it because that person doesn't understand the consequences of that decision and doesn't have the ability to process it and may have the mental acuity to make those decisions because of some type of impairment. So that is a hard line to draw, because is, you know, I've had situations where the judge would say, hey, you know, it's really unwise and he's really done something that was been really, really hurtful and maybe not fair to his children, but he knew what he was doing. Even though it was a bad decision versus he didn't understand what he was doing. He didn't understand the consequences of it, or he had so much pressure or so much duress that he really didn't see an alternative. You know, those are very, very hard questions to answer. And the interesting part, and we'll sort of talk about a little bit more about this after the break, is there are more cases of financial exploitation of the elderly than there is child abuse now. So it's a huge problem, and it's really leaking into the legal system in a lot of different contexts, which we'll talk about a little bit more. And so it's a real problem. You just got to be vigilant and watch it. And like Albert said, there's certain signs that would demonstrate that, you know, that happening. So,
do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.